Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Dynamo All Access here on Yahoo Sports Radio 1560 AM. And joining us right now is the manager of the Houston Dash, Randy Waldrum. The Dash, another step up the ladder this year, ending up in fifth place in the NWSL, just out of that last fourth position in that playoff spot. And the manager joins us now. Randy, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
Yeah, I know this was an incredibly challenging year. You and I have talked about it with the Women's World Cup, players in and out. But in the end, this is a great positive jump from the prior season.
Well, no question about it. You know, I think our goal was to make the playoffs, and we didn't quite make it there. I think we ended up 6 points out of that fourth and final spot. But, you know, to finish fifth, and it was a huge improvement from last year, and I think the fans could see our team was much improved. And, you know, we just need to make those same kind of strides going into next year and make sure we're really competing for a championship then.
Now, you're already hard at work for next year. You're watching college games. You're on the road going to those games live. January, the NSCAA convention, the women's draft will occur. In December, prior to that, is the NCAA Women's College Cup. So you're already looking towards the next season. What are some of the things on your wish list here as you look ahead as to elements that you might want to add to the Dash?
Well, I think it goes right up the spine of our team, Glenn. It's, you know, I think we need another really good, big-time center back. I think we need a good defensive holding midfield player. And then the position everybody in the league is looking for is that player that can just consistently score goals for you. So I think right up the spine, we need to strengthen our squad immediately in those three areas. The other thing I think we're looking at is, in addition, we're always looking at just the players that can make our roster deeper, you know, and we weren't quite deep enough this year. We were much better than year one, but still not quite deep enough, you know, when we were missing those national team players. So getting your overall roster a little deeper, but specifically those three positions.
Now, you've got a roster full of tremendous internationals. I mean, you got Brazilians, Canadians, U.S. internationals as big as Carly Lloyd, Megan Klingenberg, and Morgan Bryan, Canadian national team members. How much of this is about re-signing people, too? I mean, when I look at this roster, it's got a lot of big names on it. How much of that process has to occur?
Yeah, that's going on now. You know, Brian's hard at work on all of that. I think there's a window right after the season ends, October 1st, that you've got a period of time to get those players re-signed and get contracts renewed and so forth. And I feel confident that, you know, we're going to get all of that taken care of and get the players back that you mentioned. So he's hard at work at that right now, but that is another big piece of it. We certainly, you know, want to be able to keep those that we definitely feel like can help us win in the future. And so re-signing players is always a big piece of it as well.
Yeah, is it a little different now with the Women's World Cup win and all the celebrity that's come in the challenge of getting, you know, Carly Lloyd, Klingenberg, and Morgan Bryan back?
Well, I think the good thing about it is those three players in particular were real happy with the way they were treated here in Houston. And, of course, Carly had been around the league for a while, so she knows what it's like compared to the other teams, and I think Klingenberg as well. So I feel real confident about those three. And I think, you know, as well as our Canadian internationals and even our Brazilian internationals, I feel good about where we are, you know, having the ability to re-sign all of those players. So there's certainly some key ones on our roster that we got to make sure we do take care of and can get back. And there's always some things on the outside that can influence those factors. And but I think, you know, with where we are right now and what we know, we feel very comfortable that they'll be back.
Randy, I get the sense that Andres is a player, the Brazilian, who's only 20 years of age, is one that you feel is really going to ultimately begin to platform as she gets more comfortable.
Yeah, I think she's a star. You know, I really do. And I think the fans that got to watch her a little bit late in the season this year would probably tell you the same thing. I just think she's got a lot of special qualities. And when I look at her at 20 years old and I go, my gosh, you know, back when I was in the college game, she'd just be a sophomore and, you know, or maybe going into her junior year. And here she is already with, you know, U-20 World Cups and senior team World Cups under her belt. And she's a key figure in a pro league as good as ours here. So she's going to be a real important player to us. And the good news is, you know, she wants to be back. And so I think we'll have her re-signed and everything's, you know, is planned to move forward with her. But I think she's a future star in the league, but around the world as well.
Houston Dash manager Randy Waldrum joining us here. Kaleo, hi. A nice second year for her, huh?
Yeah, you know, she got better statistically from year one, and we hope we can make those same kind of strides, you know, for next year. And as I've told you many times, I think she's got all the qualities to her game that you'd like. I think that the one big factor now is we improved it from year one to year two, but we've got to improve it again in year three to help us get over the hump, but to help her as well as far as national team looks. And that is just taking care of the end product, and that's putting the ball in the back of the net. You know, she creates so many good chances for herself and for others. And now we got to maximize that and try to get a little bit more production out of those chances she creates. So it's a, you know, she's young and it's a continued work in progress to get her to develop that composure, you know, in and around the goal. And once we can get her to that point, then I think she's going to be a real, real future star.
Randy, anybody on the Dash this year that really kind of exceeded your expectations that might have surprised you a little bit as a manager?
Well, I'd have to think about it a minute. I don't think there was anybody that really stood out that totally surprised me. I think I was really pleased once we got Andressa here. We saw a lot of video, and of course we followed her through the World Cup, and we liked what we saw. But to see her kind of impact our team late in the season like we did, Morgan Bryan didn't surprise me because I knew what she could do. But another one that I was really, really happy with in terms of seeing that, you know, she can do it at this level as well as the collegiate level. And I don't think the rest really, you know, I can't think of anybody that really surprised me. I think we kind of got what we thought we could get out of the players that we had. I think Klingenberg was much improved this year over last year. We saw her confidence just skyrocket, you know, through the World Cup. And I think this time last year, she wasn't a starter. She wasn't even assured a roster spot with the World Cup team. So she had a little bit of a different personality last year. And now she's just developed all this confidence. So I think she's grown a lot. But I think our players really kind of played the way we expected. There was a young player that we signed late that I was real pleased with Jen LaPont, who's kind of knocked around as an amateur for the last two or three years of this league. And I thought she probably was our most improved player from the beginning of the season to the end, and was really happy that we were able to get her signed at the end to give her that, you know, that lifelong dream of a player, and that is, you know, signing her first pro contract.
Yeah, she was an incredible story. How many years was it that she was kind of banging around there before getting that contract? Can you just pick that story?
Yeah, she's been 3 years. You know, she's knocked around Seattle for a couple of years and came in late to us last season. And then stayed and came back and tried it again and was an amateur for us, you know, probably a little over two-thirds of our season this year. And then, you know, finally just continued to prove herself worthy. And when Nikki Cross, you know, retired, we ended up with a spot available. And fortunately, it's nice as a manager when you can make a player, you know, always remember that day. You know, it's great to see the look on their face and when we let her know that we were actually going to sign her, because as you know, Glenn, in this business, 3 years of hard work trying to make your dream come true. And when it finally happens, it was just amazing for her. So a great, great kid. Really, really happy to be able to do that for her.
Yeah, Jen LaPont, what a great story. 25 years of age, signing her first contract and playing quite a bit for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go on to the NWSL final. This is one that I called last year, and I thought this was an incredible, and it was on artificial surface as well in Seattle. I thought last year's final was just an incredible example of the NWSL, the quality of play, the intent, the purpose of play, all these things, stars. And FCKC won the title over Seattle. Seattle looks like a well-oiled machine. Is there any way anybody knocks them off this year if it's not self-inflicted by themselves?
Well, I think Kansas City's capable of doing it again. I'm going to probably stick with Seattle this year because I think they're on a little bit more of a mission, knowing that they had such a great year through the regular season and then lost it at the end. You know how gutted that can make any team. And so I think they'll have a little bit more motivation. I think, again, even though Kansas City won it out on the West Coast last year, they're still going to be playing in front of a lot of fans out in Portland. And I think Seattle will really pack the stadium, you know, with their fans. So I think Seattle's going to win it. But like you, I think it's a great showcase. I've felt all year long, even when Kansas City was struggling early in the year, you know, I've said all along, I think them and Seattle are the two best teams that, in their style of play and their ability to possess and their ability to attack and defend, they've been the two most organized teams and the two deepest teams in the league the last 2 years. So it wasn't really a surprise to me that they both made it back to the final again this year. Should be a great final, too, by the way. I think Kansas City's fully capable. Anytime you've got A-Rod, and anytime you have Lauren Holiday, you've got a chance, you know. And so I think it'll be a great game. But I tell you, I love that midfield of Little, Fishlock, and Winters with Seattle. It's just a lot to cope with.
Do you think Keelan Winters is one that needs to be considered a little bit more for the national team?
Well, you know, I read a little bit on the internet where Jill's thinking of shaking up, you know, her team a little bit. And you know, we saw her put Sauerbrunn up in midfield last week, and I don't think there's a need to do that. I think Keelan Winters is the answer for that. I am shocked she hasn't been brought in since Pia left, and as good as she's been in the league the last 2 years, we need a defensive central midfield player with our full team. And to me, it would be you could keep Sauerbrunn Johnson back in the back, and you've got that tandem for years to come, and you just slip Winters in there with players like Morgan Bryan and Carly Lloyd, and you're good to go, you know. So I really think she was the best defensive midfield player in the league this year and last year. And me personally, I think she deserves a look. And I don't know why she hasn't gotten it yet. And, you know, Jill would have to answer that question. But on the outside looking in, I would say she'd be a perfect solution to that problem.
Yeah, why would anybody want to split that two center backs up that were just so outstanding in the World Cup? And I think to some degree, Tobin Heath was slated to start that game against Haiti and then got an ankle injury or something that kept her out. And I'm not even sure if that's a move with Becky Sauerbrunn that really has a lot of purpose and intent behind it as to actually playing there. Do you think?
And Glenn, probably not. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It seems like there's a lot of other players that she could move into there, you know, without having to make that move. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it may have just been a one-off game, and people may be reading a lot more into that move than there is. It's an exhibition. It's a friendly. It's against a not very strong Haiti team in terms of the world stage. So you could play a lot of players. You know, she could have put Sauerbrunn up front in that game, and Becky would have done well, you know. So, as you said, there may not be much intent to that at all, other than it's a chance to get a look at different things. But I would be shocked at this point, as good as that back line is, that she would want to break that one up. Seems like she would try to go find the answer somewhere else first, you know, although time is kind of short between now and the Olympic qualifications in the early part of the year. But I don't know that there was a real reason to that move. You know, I would have thought she'd have moved Julie Johnson up into that defensive midfield role before Sauerbrunn if she was going to, you know, if she was going to change that pairing for any reason, because Johnson's played there before, you know, whereas Becky's pretty much been in the back. So we'll see if there's anything to it or not, but I do think Akilah and Winters would be a great solution moving forward with that team. She's been in our program. You know, Pia had her in all the time, so she knows what it's all about. And to me, I think she's been that best player in the league in that spot this year.
Randy, as always, thank you very much for coming on the program. Let's check back with you in 2 weeks or so and get some more thoughts on the college game from you and everything Houston Dash.
Okay. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, bye-bye. Randy, for your time. That's Randy Waldrum, the manager of the Houston Dash. Just missing out on the playoffs this year, already looking for more players through the college game, and, of course, never stopped for a manager. We'll take a break here on Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Quick word for Bud Light. Bud Light reminds you to get down to the Dynamo Sporting Kansas City game tomorrow night. You can get your tickets at HoustonDynamo.com. Personally, never been on the radio if it was not for Bud Light. So our thanks to Bud Light. And with that, we bring in Fox analyst, former U.S. national team member. You know him. We know him. He's even been here in studio one time. The one and only Alexi Lalas. Alexi, thank you for coming on the show.
Hello, I like Bud Light too. I have plenty of stories that involve Bud Light.
So. Yeah, well, we might have to do one before the end of this because Bud Light would certainly appreciate that. Let's just start. You were part of the broadcast today for this absolutely insane moment in soccer history. Robert Lewandowski scoring 5 goals in 9 minutes. By the way, after Wolfsburg plays an incredible first half and is up 1-0. So, just what went through your mind when you were watching this?
Well, that we were seeing history. And regardless if you're a Bundesliga fan or not or anything, I mean, anybody that watched that game or goes back and sees some of the highlights here is going to appreciate the fact they are seeing something very special. Not something that you can anticipate, not something you can call Robert Lewandowski, who did not start the game, was on the bench the entire first half, gets substituted in. This is Bayern Munich versus Wolfsburg, two teams that are very, very good, and really a moment when you said, all right, now Bayern's really going to get tested by a team that is worth their weight. And a very good half, as you said, from Wolfsburg, that first half, they could have been up 2-0, they were up 1-0, and then, I'll tell you what, it was just one of those things where the gods of soccer said, you know what, I know you're Bayern Munich, I know you got a lot of money and great talent, but we're still going to give you a moment of just incredible historic proportions, and to see him come out and score a goal. We were in the studio trying to calculate, because he scored one goal, then he scored another goal, and it was the quickest 2 goals, and it was the quickest 3 goals, and now we're in historic territory, and 4 goals, 5 goals, just something that for many, many years people will talk about, regardless of, it transcends the league, and people that love soccer just saw something very, very special today.
Yeah, I like the fact that the Bundesliga now is available to everybody and we're able to place it next to watching Premier League games and all these other leagues, because I think we were missing something.
Yeah. I mean, and we're very lucky over at Fox, you know, FS1 and FS2 and our online formats over at Fox, we're televising everything, and this is the first year that we've had it. And like you said, it's been kind of out of sight, out of mind. We've had an understanding of what was going on, but to see it on a weekly basis and to see the great games and the stands and the aesthetics of it, and then to see the play, it's been really, really fun to dive into that, because EPL, we all know what a huge juggernaut that is. But we've heard talk about the Bundesliga, and certainly there's people that have followed it, but to make it easy to find it right now on Fox is, I think, a good thing for the Bundesliga, and for me, someone that's coming at it that hasn't watched a whole lot of it. Absolutely wonderful action, individual talent, great teams, great culture when it comes to the league and to the sport and to the teams, and just fun to watch.
Yeah, and the attendance is absolutely remarkable. I mean, the backdrop of these games, no matter who the team is, it's always absolutely packed. You don't see empty seats.
Incredible scenes, you know, when you talk about Dortmund or any place else, and also teams that you know are going to be around when it gets to the nitty gritty of whether it's Europa or whether it's Champions League. Obviously, Bayern Munich, one of the best teams in the world, and Pep Guardiola, and just all the talent that they have on the field, on the bench. I mean, this weekend they were able to start guys like Mueller on the bench, and it's just pretty incredible. And they don't even have guys like Ribéry and Arjen Robben because of their injuries right now. So they're just going to get better when those guys get back. It's a fun team to watch.
Yeah, Pep Guardiola looking like he had a good time today. All right, Diego Costa, wind-up artist, a baiter. How about his band? Did he deserve it? Are you tired of his antics, or do you think he's a good character for the game?
Oh, I could care less about his antics. They don't bother me in the least. There are absolutely no saints in this game. They are all sinners. The sanctimony and the hypocrisy that comes out on a weekly basis and certainly came out over the weekend with regards to Diego Costa makes me laugh. This judgment we have where, you know, a two-footed tackle is okay, but a dive or an embellishment is you send the person right to hell. I think he's great for the game. He is incredible theater. He's an incredible personality. I hate retro refing. We give these men and women the opportunity, the responsibility, and the respect to go out there on the field and to make decisions with the understanding that they are human and they are going to make decisions that we might not disagree with. And even in not making a decision, you are making a decision. And I hate going back and retro refing games. Now, it's different if the entire refereeing crew misses something off the ball that in this day and age with the technology we have and the video that we have that we can see something like that. But to go back and to look at these things, it drives me nuts. And I know I'm probably in the minority, but I would say there are a lot of people out there that are screaming and yelling and coming down on Diego Costa that if their team had the opportunity to have Diego Costa, they would have him.
Oh, and they would love him.
Yep. Yep.
They would absolutely love him, and it's no different with Luis Suarez. And if every Chelsea fan that was bashing him when he was at Liverpool, if he had been at Chelsea, they would have absolutely.
And you know, I mean, there is always, and I know I get sometimes people are confused sometimes when I talk about this, but whether it's diving or embellishment or whatever you want to call it, the guile and the sly type of work that guys that we're talking about, Diego Costa and Luis Suarez and these types of players, it is a skill. And it is something that, if it's done correctly, can be incredibly valuable. And I'm not saying that you don't punish people, because if they do get dinged and the referee's out there and he sees it, absolutely, he or she should punish it. But there are so many things. And I guarantee there were things done this weekend that people didn't see that were as bad or worse. And so it's done constantly. It will continue to get done by individual players looking to get that edge. It's stuff off the ball. It's stuff on the ball. It's stuff that you see. It's stuff that you don't see. And there are many, many, like I said, there are plenty of sinners out there. There are no saints.
All right, Jurgen Klinsmann. Now I'm going to put you in the sinner category.
Okay.
Are you after Jurgen? I mean, do you like Jurgen as a person?
Do I like him?
Yeah.
As a person? Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's fascinating. I love talking to him. He always says things when we have conversations that are interesting. So when it's a private conversation, it's interesting. Publicly, when we're talking, when it's on the record, when it's off the record, when he's talking just in general, I think he is an incredibly interesting and fascinating individual. I think he's provocative. I think he's intentionally provocative at times. I think that he has furthered the discussion and the discourse when it comes to American soccer. He has asked questions that either we haven't asked before or questions that we are afraid to answer. I think all of those are good things. So that, from a personal perspective, yeah, I think he's great. I really do like him.
Is his provocation working right now?
No, and that's that's the problem right now. And I think that at times, many of the things that he says with regards to the team, with regards to American soccer culture, and whether it's that we need to educate more and all that kind of stuff, I think it is provocative, and I think at times it's condescending. I think at times it is it is irritating to people. The fact that at times he doesn't take responsibility for decisions that he makes. The times that take for example the Bedoya situation the other day, where he substituted Bedoya out in the first half. Right. I thought it was completely out of line for a head coach to put a player in a situation, in a position he's never played before, which he admitted after the game, which Bedoya admitted after the game, and then to bring him out in the first half. And you've watched enough soccer. When a player gets substituted in the first half, during the first half, either you're injured or you've just had an absolute shocker. And it is a way of making an example of a player within a game. And I thought it was unfair, and I thought it was something that should never have been done, and certainly shouldn't have been done in a situation like the other day in a friendly game.
Alexi, did anybody address that with Jurgen and ask him that question, why he took him out? Well, number one, why did he play Batoya as a holding midfielder? And number two, why did they take him out?
Well, I wasn't on the game, so we at Fox were not doing the game. That was in the ESPN situation. I don't know if he did. He certainly, you know, talked about the situation, even in the interview at halftime coming back into the game, saying that it wasn't working. And, I get that. But these are the types of decisions that make you scratch your head. And Jurgen Klinsmann oftentimes does it. And sometimes it works out great, either for the individual that's been put in the situation or for the team ultimately in the results. Now, does this mean that coming up in October 10th, the game against Mexico, Jurgen Klinsmann's job is in jeopardy? If they don't win? No, I don't think so. I think his seat is very, very cool right now. And I think that they have given him the keys to the kingdom when it comes to U.S. soccer and Sunil Gulati. And unless something ridiculously awful happens during qualifying for the next World Cup, I don't think that he's going anywhere. I think they are married to him both in terms of the power. He is both the coach and the technical director, and in terms of the money that they're paying for him, and they're going to ride it out.
Yeah, past history would tell us that also. Here's another guy that's a little bit directionless, Louis van Gaal. do you think Louis found out that he is not bigger than Manchester United?
Well, I know I still think he probably believes, whether he says it publicly, regardless if he gets fired or how this ends up happening, that he is the big man. I don't mind that. I don't mind. I love big, bold, arrogant personalities in my sports, whether it's the players or whether it's the coach. Now, you have to couple it with winning and consistently winning, especially when you're a coach of a team like Manchester United with the money and the history that it has. I think that they have to a certain extent turned a corner, but they are still not, once again, the Manchester United that everybody seems to compare and contrast them with, which is of 10 years, 20 years, and 20 years ago under Sir Alex. And that was always going to be a tough reach to get back to those lofty heights immediately. But at some point, you do have to get back and live up to the past with new players. Now, you got guys like Memphis coming in and Martial and these types of players that he's readily admitted are players for the future. But you know what? The future is now. You got to perform now, whether you're Louis van Gaal or David Moyes or anybody else right now. And so he'll be under pressure, but I don't think he's going anywhere quite yet. I don't think it's gotten to that point yet, but it's going to be interesting to see how this all ultimately plays out from an EPL perspective. But it's what you want.
Yeah, speaking of interesting, Martial has gotten 3 goals in 2 games. He's only 19 years of age. Pretty remarkable start for this kid.
Incredible. And almost, you if you've been around soccer for a while or sports, there's a certain part of you that cringes saying, oh, no, I hope we're not putting too much on his plate. Yes, he's young. And he's come out of the box with goals and almost lived up, not just lived up to the price tag, but now he's looking like a bargain. But in order to maintain that, you have to keep scoring goals. And he's not playing on a Sir Alex type of team right now in terms of the talent around him. And can he keep it up? And this is a team that is dying for a hero. And it says a lot about where Manchester United is right now, that the hero they have just recently anointed is 19 years old and a guy that has no EPL experience that just came into the team. They're dying for it, but who knows? Maybe he takes them to the promised land going forward.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM. I'm Glenn Davis. Part two now of our interview with Alexi Lalas. Alexi Lalas joining us here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. All right, Trinidad and Tobago's Attorney General has signed a document to go ahead with the extradition to the U.S. of former FIFA Vice President Jack Warner, who, you know, we all love here in Houston because Trinidad and Tobago's women's team came here and they were trying to qualify for the Women's World Cup in Canada, and they came here and they had no money. So they were asking for money. Of course, Jack had money to put his name on a bunch of training facilities down in Trinidad and Tobago. The walls are no doubt going to continue to come down for years in this FIFA scandal. And yeah. I know you've asked Sunil Gulati in the past and Don Garber about involvement. this is going to keep going on for a number of years. Is there some concerns about U.S. involvement here? Because, you know, we know what has happened with some of the CONCACAF countries, and we also know what has happened with one of our CONCACAF guys who lived down in the Trump Tower.
Well, I think we would be naive if we didn't at least bring up the possibility that we're dealing with a summer of corruption. And I think that it's been good, and you know, God bless Loretta Lynch and all the work that she has done to expose it and continues to do. But we're talking about CONCACAF. We're talking about FIFA. When we talk about CONCACAF, a lot of the names and the faces and the people have been in business together for a long time. When it comes to the federations involved in CONCACAF, when it comes to the marketing of teams and tournaments and games and all the different things that we have been enjoying summer after summer and year after year after year, and it's worrisome. And that's why I've asked these guys, look, is this going to come to our shores in the sense of not where we're indicting and bringing people back to face judgment here in the United States, but actually people that are here that are involved in soccer? And I asked Don Garber at the All-Star game, and he told me 100,000%, I think is how he put it.
Yeah, I remember the interview.
I hope that that is the case. And it's really interesting to see how this Copa Centenario is progressing, because it all is a reflection of what has happened this summer. The U.S. Soccer Federation knows that they have to be on their best behavior, and absolutely everything has to be transparent and above board. And that's one of the reasons why they are balking at this point in getting into bed with Comnibol and hosting a big tournament here in the United States, unless they are absolutely sure that nothing can be tied to them when it comes to corruption. And that's the way that they should be going about it.
Absolutely.
The big concern is once they start peeling back these layers and these folks, at what point does it start to get to our shores, either individually or entities that exist on our shores? And that would be a huge disappointment and another problem going along.
Copa Centenario. This. I don't think people realize how big this is going to be. I think this is almost in a way going to be like hosting a World Cup because of all the stars, the quality of play, cities it's going to reach. I think it's going to be big.
It's going to be huge. And for those that don't know, Copa Centenario, the 100th version of the Copa America, and for the last couple of years, they've been talking about hosting it next summer in the United States, which would be wonderful. Like you said, it would be the biggest men's tournament since the 1994 World Cup, and just a wonderful way to celebrate the men's game with incredible stars coming over, and then from a practical perspective for Jurgen Klinsmann and the team, a great tournament against quality competition on our own shores. If it happens, I think it's going to be great, especially because we can do a tournament very, very well right here. But while we say we can do it turnkey, you do need a little bit of time. And every day that passes when this isn't affirmed that it's going to be in the United States next summer is one day less when we could use to organize and market and sell it in the way that it's going to be. It's still not going to be 100% because we've already wasted time. But I think if they get it done, like I said, they have to have all of that transparency with regards to the contracts and everybody that's working in it. If it gets done, I think it's just going to be a wonderful tournament for American soccer fans to check out next summer. I hope it gets done.
Yeah, me too. A lot of money to be made in that one as well. As we ask you a question or two more, and then we'll let you go. Let's look at this weekend and a couple of games on tap here. Spurs and City, I go to that one first in the Premier League. And then how about the Foxes of Leicester at home against Arsenal and Arsene Wenger? So those two games, to me, Spurs can't do what they did last year. They're home to City. But City's lost two in a row now. Has it been interesting to see City lose in the Champions League and then turn around and pretty much dominate a game but get beat by West Ham?
Well, keep in mind that before City lost in the Champions League, they started out the EPL season great guns. And then they go and lose in Champions League, and you couple that with other teams losing, both in Champions League and in Europa League, and then there's this whole narrative of the EPL, and they're playing a different type of game, and it doesn't translate to the international game. Then Manchester United goes back, and what they were going great guns at, they aren't able to continue when it comes to the EPL. Now, I think that they won tonight in the cup against Sunderland, and DeAndre Yedlin got a start, so which isn't saying much, but it's still a win. And you know, when I think about it right now, I think that they'll be okay going forward. Arsenal is coming off of last weekend and all the controversy with Diego Costa. Now, evidently, they get Gabriel back because he's not going to be suspended because that was rescinded. But I think Arsene Wenger is certainly under pressure, having lost that game last week. In the way that they lost it, maybe he gets a pass because he can just blame, hey, it was Diego Costa and the referees and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, he's going to be under pressure. I think Mourinho right now, who a week ago was in a situation where we've never seen him almost being a normal coach. Mourinho doesn't do normal. He is the special one, and yet he was in this normal type of situation that a lot of coaches go through where they're just losing games and their job was in danger, and yet they do well on the weekend. And if anybody can turn it around, it can be Jose Mourinho. So it's going to be fun. It's always fun to check out all the entertainment and drama on and off the field when it comes to the EPL.
So that was part two of Alexi Lalas. Stay with us on the show. Much, much more to come. Quick reminder here, tickets at HoustonDynamo.com for both the Dynamo and Dash. You can follow me on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Facebook, Soccer Matters. Heck, I'm even doing this Instagram thing, Glenn Davis Soccer. Putting all kinds of pictures up over there from stadiums and behind the scenes. All right, we'll take a break. Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM, your home for soccer talk.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM. We're going to close it in style here tonight. Bud Light will bring us our next interview with the general manager, Matt Jordan. Bud Light reminds you to get down to HoustonDynamo.com. Get your tickets for this Saturday night's huge game against the Colorado Rapids. Playoff implications. Bud Light, longtime supporters of Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM. And personally, helped me get on the air with Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 many, many years ago. So with that, we bring in the general manager, Matt Jordan. Matt Jordan now, and here's a couple of analytics you need to know. He's been in Argentina, Colombia, Chile, and Uruguay. He saw 20-plus live games in 14 days, and he lives to tell it. Matt, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem, no problem. It's been a busy couple weeks for sure, Glenn. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but
yes. One of my favorites.
I definitely felt like that. I was living that, but it was a very productive trip.
All right. Before we get into the seriousness of who you were looking for, what you were looking for, give me a good story from all this travel, because I'm sure there's one or two moments where you're just kind of going, "Yeah, I wish my wife was here to see this."
Yeah, probably the most interesting thing that happened was I was in Medellin, Colombia, and I don't know if you've ever flown into Medellin, but basically you fly it, you know, it's a very mountainous region of Colombia, and the airport is basically on the top of this mountain range, and so you have to take this long, winding, convoluted road down to the city to where the clubs play in the city. And so after watching some games that day, met with some club officials. I was in a little bit of a rush to get to the airport, and so the taxi driver, we were going up this long and winding road up this mountain, and basically we were in stop traffic, and so all of a sudden, you know, he decides to take a detour, which is Medellin's version of our tollway, and we're able to pay a tariff and kind of basically go. Right, drive alongside this dirt road cliff to leapfrog a bunch of traffic to catch a normal highway, and it was very, very dicey. But fortunately, I made my plane on time.
Matt Jordan joining us, the general manager. Any cuisine that you preferred there in each country? Colombia, Chile, Uruguay, Argentina. Any place that you really liked something different?
I mean, you know, in Argentina. Yeah, you know, they're a lot different than us. I mean, they eat so late at night, you know, and so you're going out to eat at, you know, whatever, 11, 12 at night to have Argentinian beef, and it's a pretty heavy meal that late in the night to get up and going early the next morning. But you know, I was fortunate with a couple good groups, and it's important when you go in these countries to be with people that know the landscape and that you know that know how to navigate through things and that that you trust. So that was important.
All right, so let's talk kind of down to some of the analytics here. Positionally, what were you looking for? Age, what were you looking for? You know, are you looking for now maybe a guy who's 26, 27, 28? Or is it younger? You know, give us some of that insight because it's fascinating when you're going down to these countries trying to find players.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, these markets are, I mean, yeah, the Argentinian market is, it's there's just so many good players. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of times where a lot of the games you watch, Glenn, to be honest with you, you know, it's, you know, I mean, yeah, you can go watch River Plate Boca. But, you know, the reality is a lot of those games, the players are, you're so expensive and it can get, you know, to be a little bit untouchable at times. I mean, so where a lot of the opportunity is some of the mid-range clubs, even a lot of the reserve, a lot of the reserve teams for some of those big clubs, River Plate, San Lorenzo, Tigre Reserves, you know, that's where there's a lot more opportunity. Cause it's just like, you know, put yourself in another club's shoes looking at the Dynamo and, you know, they say, hey, you know, we want your marquee guy that's a starter. You know, the club's going to be like, well, you know, listen, I'm not too sure about that. So it's about finding the right opportunities. I always say this, you know, I mean, look, the challenge of my job is not, and of our job is not to find the good players. It's to find the good players at the right price that fit within our salary cap structure here in North America.
Yeah, yeah. So when you confer and you and Owen work together on sort of the needs of the team, how do you sort of narrow it down and then get to the point where, you know, if I'm looking for somebody that can play in the middle of the field and bring some creativity, or if I'm looking for a right back that can get forward, do you go down there with sort of a wish list, or do you go down there and just say, look, I'm just looking for good soccer players?
I think it's some of both. You know, I mean, what ends up happening, obviously, and I don't want to divulge too much info, but, you know, we have, you know, some areas that we've identified we'd like to continue to grow and improve in. And then also at the same time, a lot of times you'll go and, you know, you go to watch a player in one game, but you got a list of three or four other guys to keep an eye on, and another guy stands out to you. Actually, that happened, you know, the first game I watched. Outside of Buenos Aires, is, you know, I went to watch one particular player, but there were two or three that were young up and comers and that were good profiles. So I think it's a mix of both. But I think it's important that, you know, we go through, you know, it's definitely a collaboration and we know what the type of profiles we look for and we look at them together and we have a list, and it's just basically narrowing down the list. And so many moving parts, you know, financially what it looks like, you know, and timing and you know, also the way our team's performing as well, and what makes the most sense.
Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan joining us here off a trip to Argentina, Colombia, Chile, and Uruguay. 2 weeks he went down there, saw 20-plus live games, and visited four South American countries. You brought in Mauro Manotas. Excellent young talent. Lionel Miranda had a very workmanlike, tremendous ethic effort last night for the Dynamo in the 1-0 win. Younger players, are you looking for somebody maybe that's a little bit older and has a little bit more experience now?
Well, I think the makeup of the roster is it's got to have the right mix. And if you break it up into thirds, right, you know, I think it's going to have the right mix where you got a third of good veterans that you know can steady the ship. You got a third you know, I think guys in the age ranges of 24 to 28 that are, you know, in the primes of their career. And then I think, you know, especially in particular when you're always making sure you have a succession plan in place, you know, looking at your young, talented players and I think, you know, having that mix of a roster is very important. I think you can never have, you know, I think it's important to not have too much of any one thing, you know, and I think for us that's going to be important. And I think we have a good mix right now. And but we have said from day one, look, we're an aggressive group. We're never going to take our foot off the gas pedal. And, you know, and our fans can be assured that, that we're working night and day tirelessly to improve and grow as a club and as a team.
Matt, my gut tells me there's going to be more change in the future as you continue this. This is not an easy thing to sort of develop your ideology, your purpose of play, and get there with all the mechanisms in the league. I'm sure this is a project that is not a short-term project like fans would hope it would be.
Yeah.
But you guys do have a lot of tough decisions to make here in the offseason, regardless of whether you get in the playoffs or not. You got players out of contract and all. How does that all come down in working with the coach, the president, and yourself?
You know, it's a lot of discussions, a lot of evaluations. We feel like we have a good group last night's victory was important. And we're still in the mix. I think that, you know, there's no doubt about it that I think if you look throughout the league, we've probably been hit the hardest with international call-ups and the injuries that have occurred with those call-ups. If you look at Garrido, extensive missed time, Boniak extended out of extended period of time due to time with the national team, Beasley, Jermaine Taylor, Giles Barnes. So that was tough, but you know, we're not a group, and I'm not the type of person that's going to make excuses. We're working very hard. And going to your point at the beginning of your last question is that, you know, anytime you're implementing change, I mean, there's going to be a process involved. And we're working so hard to what I feel is get the club basically operating in a manner that mirrors the landscape of soccer that's changing in North America, and we're doing a good job with that. We're not satisfied with the results. We expect more, and we're going to continue to work extremely hard to do whatever we can to keep things moving in the right direction. But it's a marathon; it's not a sprint. We have a plan, and we got to stick to the plan and stay steady, and I think that's important.
When you go down there, is it defined sort of system and purpose and play? It's obviously in your head, and I'm sure that the manager has, you know, been flexible tactically all year long, and I think it's probably something every team has to be flexible tactically, but you have a primary setup and purpose of play. You're looking for players that fit into that?
Yeah. In addition, I think, you know, historically, you look through the league, and I was reading an article on MLS Soccer last week or the week before, talking about, you know, look, there's certain, you know, historically, there's certain profiles that have adapted well to the MLS. You know, look, it's not an easy league to play in, and you know, especially Houston, with the climate we deal with, it's not easy as well. And so I think it's important that there's certain profiles and from certain countries that have historically done well in the league. And then you look at also styles of play of the league, the Argentinian league, the Uruguayan league, the Colombian league. They're all very high tempo leagues. There's not a lot of space. There's not a lot of time on the ball, and that's quite similar to Major League Soccer. I look at the league even in Uruguay. It's not as big of a league. I mean, it's a very physically tough, demanding, competitive league. And so there's a lot of moving parts to all this for sure.
Well, Matt, listen, it's very kind of you to take the time out here after the long travel to come on and enlighten our fans about what's happening with you and the Dynamo and the future. So, as always, we thank you very much.
No, anytime. We really appreciate the fan support and your support as well. And we look forward to continuing to push this season and as we also look to build moving forward.
He's Matt Jordan, Dynamo General Manager. We close it in big style here tonight. A reminder, the Dynamo again in action this Saturday night. They will take on the Colorado Rapids. It is a huge game when it comes to playoff implications. Tickets at HoustonDynamo.com. You can follow us over on Facebook, Soccer Matters. Go over there, like us, join the conversation as we talk the great game of soccer. That'll do it tonight for Dynamo All Access here on Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560. I'm Glenn Davis.